Alexis T. Dang knew something was up. Her official job was as a civilian liaison between the Autobot government and the Wedge Defense Force. But she was an Autobot ally of long standing in proportion to her young age. At 24, she'd been involved with them in one way or another for almost exactly half her life. And she had extensive contacts in the Minicon community, particularly around Iacon. As such, it hadn't taken long for word, however sketchy, of the chaos in Little Iacon to reach her. Now she emerged from the air station's admin complex, where her office was, and headed across the apron toward the visiting officers' quarters, intending to ask General Courier if she knew anything more about the trouble. She was about halfway across when she noticed a tall figure who looked like an early model Decepticon Sky Soldier, standing near the SF-15D prototype, examining it thoughtfully with hand on chin. "Hey!" she shouted across the 30 or so yards that separated them. The Transformer turned, giving the "me" sign. She didn't recognize him. His general type, yes, but she'd never seen this particular individual before. But she noticed even at this distance that he was battered and in need of repairs, and that he wore no faction markings. "This is a restricted area," Alexis went on, quickening her pace, then breaking into a run. "Keep away from that aircraft."
"I was just admiring it," he replied. "I beg your pardon. I didn't mean any harm."
Then he squinted at her, his optic shutters narrowing, and the half of his face that wasn't an immobile emergency patch took on a look of puzzlement. Then, somewhat to her surprise, he looked startled, turned, transformed, and streaked away, leaving behind just a contrail and an echo. Alexis skidded to a halt alongside the Cosmo Eagle, deeply confused. Had he recognized her? She was quite sure she'd never seen him before. But, she realized with a shock, his voice had been very familiar. Involuntarily, her right hand closed into a fist against her upper chest. She was still standing there, staring off toward the horizon, when General Courier arrived a minute later, fitting together her flight armor as she ran across the tarmac. "Hey, Alexis," she said. "Problem?"
No, General," Alexis replied. "There was an unauthorized transformer out here looking at your aircraft, but it doesn't look like he touched it."
"Autobot? Decepticon?" Terror wondered. "Non-aligned, I think," Alexis told her. Terror did a quick walk around, ceremonially kicked the starboard main gear's tire, then shrugged and pulled down the boarding ladder. "Looks okay," she grinned. "Maybe he was transcanning it," she said wryly, then looked closer. "Hey, are you okay? You look like you saw a ghost."
"Maybe I did," Alexis murmured.
"Huh?"
"Never mind." Alexis shook her head. "I assume you're out here because you've heard about the situation in Little Iacon?"
"What little Jetfire could tell me about it. Have you got anything that might help?"
"Only that the Minicons of the surrounding districts are frightened," Alexis told her. "Whatever happened down there happened fast. Fast enough that very little word came out of the city before it went dark. Little Iacon's neighbors fear the worst."
"Well, hopefully it's just some kind of glitch," Terror said, though neither she nor Alexis believed that, as she climbed up to the cockpit and started strapping in. "You better get clear." Platform number 7G, Little Iacon Central Station. The ad hoc strike group Miko had dubbed Task Force Megadeth, for reasons which eluded Stinger, whose musical education hadn't reached that point yet, arrived on the platform level of Little Iacon Central Station more in the manner of ministry, fast, loud, and absolutely relentless. The Geth presence on the platform level was fairly minimal. The synthetics clearly thought they had the district locked down such that they were unlikely to be attacked via the tunnels. 200 yards out, Sari disembarked from Stinger without stopping, literally hitting the ground running, and with her jet skates on, she easily kept pace with Bulkhead as he took point. The Geth sentries on the platform spotted him. He wasn't making the slightest effort to be stealthy, after all, but their light hand weapons were useless against his forward armor. The biggest member of Task Force Megadeth jumped from the tracks to the concourse without even bothering to transform, crushing human-scale Geth troopers under his wheels, and slung himself sideways across the platform, mowing down barricades and sentries alike with his mass. At the end of the slide, as if it were all part of one practiced maneuver, he transformed to robot mode and Miko dove out between two of his sliding panels. She hit the floor rolling, bounced to her feet, drew her sidearm, and blasted the one Geth trooper bulkhead hadn't hit in the chest. Sylvie, who was jumping out of Soundwave with blaster under her arm at the time, nevertheless had the well-honed tactical awareness of a World's Welfare Work Association trouble consultant, one with little field experience, admittedly, but that experience had been hard won on the battlefields of the Galactic Civil War. She was a small arms expert, second in her class at the 3WA Academy, only to her partner Pris Morgan. As such, even from a distance of 20 or so yards, she recognized the distinctive profile, and even more distinctive bark, of an Exo-Seleucia Phalanx heavy pistol. This, she knew, was a weapon designed to kill boomers, back in the days when Genom Corporation's military arm had been the clearest, most present danger to the Empire of Seleucia's interests. Not for nothing had the Seleucian Marines who carried them in the War of Corporate Occupation nicknamed the type the Dismantler. And, as Miko had just demonstrated, it was just as effective against Geth soldier units. Sylvie flashed the Neo-Japanese girl a thumbs up as she piled into cover behind a bench at the platform's edge. Miko, her face invisible behind the mirrored visor of her CVR helmet, threw the horns in reply with her free hand, then pivoted to cover the platform entrance as a mass of Geth, summoned by their comrades' sudden off-lining, flooded down the escalators from above. Sylvie grinned, knowing what came next, and slung Blaster across the tiled floor so that he passed between Stinger's feet and came to rest at the base of the banked escalators. The oncoming Geth hesitated, puzzled, and then recoiled as the garishly colored piece of archaic personal audio equipment before them suddenly became a full-sized and very unfriendly Autobot. The platform was getting crowded, and Soundwave and Blaster both decided it wouldn't do to add to the confusion by deploying their Minicon troops down here. Instead, the four full-sized Transformers made a flying wedge and swept up the central escalators, crushing and blasting any Geth foolhardy enough to stand in their way. The two humans and Sari flanked them on the Minicon-scaled stairs, picking off stragglers. "Watch out! Wall crawlers!" Miko cried, firing at something on the curved ceiling above the main escalators. Sylvie didn't see it at first, until Miko's fire hit it and caused it to fall amid a splash of some whitish fluid. A Geth shell, about the size of the troopers, but skinnier, longer-limbed and not armored. She looked up and saw more of them, clinging to the tunnel ceiling. They moved with a quick, darting motion that seemed entirely unsynthetic, and seemed to have some kind of beam weapon, as opposed to the soldier Geth's pulse rifles. "Oh, I don't think so," Sari muttered. Then, getting up a bit of a run, she hopped the handrail at the side of her escalator and ran up the curved wall, scything through the group of them with her glowing blades and coming down on the other side next to Miko. "Show off," Miko grumbled, ejecting a spent energy cell from her phalanx. The ticket hall was more heavily guarded, particularly since their incursion into the area had, by this point, drawn the full attention of all the Geth in the square. From here, through the windows, Task Force Megadeth could see the sorting and loading operations going on in the center of the square, perhaps 100 yards away. But there were an awful lot of Geth, and larger ones than down below, between them and the prisoners. "Frontal assault, phase 2," Stinger declared with a satisfied smile, blazing away at the smaller Geth as they rushed into the room. "Getting pretty crowded in here," Blaster observed tensely, kicking a Geth destroyer halfway to the doors. "We gotta get some space before they bunch up so much they push us right back down the stairs."
"Guess that's my cue," Bulkhead remarked.
So saying, he broke into a trot, then a run, bull-rushing Geth out of his path with his sheer mass, then leaped into the air. As he flew, his right hand transformed into a wrecking ball. He came down like a swimmer doing a cannonball in the center of the lobby. The impact cratered the floor and scattered Geth out of the immediate area. And then he made the hole bigger by launching his wrecking ball toward the entrance on a cable, crushing everything in its path, and then whirling himself through a full circle with predictable results.
"Not enough room for you?"
he asked, retracting the ball and turning it back into a hand. "I taught him that," said Miko smugly.
"Whatever you want more room for, Blaster, do it quick, 'cause I think they're going to fill it up again,"
Stinger cautioned, pointing to the incoming next wave.
"Okay, boys," Blaster declared. "Rewind, Steeljaw, do what you do best. Ramhorn, cover Sylvie."
"Ravage, Laserbeak, Rumble, Frenzy. Prepare for deployment."
Soundwave agreed.
"Operation, Destruction. Eject, 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 eject."
Then, after glancing over his shoulder for just an instant at Miko, the Decepticon comm officer did something entirely unexpected and started playing a music track of his own, one that drew instantaneous approval from both the girl and his Minicon associates. Sylvie didn't place the tune at first, though she was sure she'd heard it. It started with a distorted, snarling wail of electric guitar, not so much a melodic intro as a demonstration of volume, thrown down as a challenge to the listener. Not until Frenzy sprang last from Soundwave's chest panel, transforming to robot mode and diving straight into the oncoming wave of Geth with both drills screaming, did she peg it as Frenzy roared along with the vocalist the opening line,
"Kick out the jams, motherfuckers!"
The hard-charging music and Frenzy's sheer fury, out of all proportion to his size, seemed to galvanize the rest of Task Force Megadeth to even greater efforts. They exploded out of Central Station like shrapnel from a detonating bomb, tearing into the converging Geth, hell-bent on reaching the middle of the square and freeing the Minicons who remained trapped there. There was no attempt at subtlety here, no strategy, nor guile. Buzzsaw, who had remained on station the whole time to monitor the situation, broke cover and started savaging the Geth's flank with his razor-sharp talons, beak, and his twin mortar cannons, while Laserbeak's precise ruby lasers sought out the more critical-looking units and surgically removed them from the network. Ravage lived up to his name, springing from shadow to shadow, leaving destruction and the emotionless synthetic equivalent of confusion in his wake. Steeljaw was less stealthy but no less lethal, ripping into the flank opposite Buzzsaw. Rewind shadowed Blaster closely, laying down accurate covering fire. Rumble and Frenzy went straight up the middle, smashing and carving all before them. Neither even bothered with his blasters. Their pile drivers and drill fists did all the talking for them. And Ramhorn stayed by Sylvie, giving any Geth who got too close a taste of the horn. Even in the midst of this chaos, Sylvie had the mental bandwidth to take notice of several things, though she wouldn't be consciously aware that she'd noticed them until later. Sari and Stinger complemented each other spectacularly in combat, each always seeming to be looking at what the other couldn't see. Sylvie had heard that Transformers and humans, or other Transformers, who had undergone the binary bonding process could do something like that, achieve an almost psychic rapport that made them able, with practice, to fight as more or less a single being, like two hands on one body. Then again, she and Pris could do something like that too, on their best days, and they didn't have any sort of technological or psionic link at all, as far as she knew, so maybe it was just the result of long and strenuous training. She wondered how old they were. Blaster had said they were minors, but she'd never heard of an underage Transformer before. And he'd said something about Stinger having parents, too, which was something that bore investigation later on. Bulkhead and Miko, by contrast, didn't fight as one unit so much as stay out of each other's way. But they were as good at that, in their way, as Sari and Stinger were at interlocking their spheres of battle. Sylvie would have been hard-pressed to say which one of them was the more fearless, the huge, invincible-looking Autobot warrior, or the tiny, fragile-looking human girl, but they both gave the fight everything they had. And, most shockingly of all, Blaster and Soundwave were fighting as a team, shoulder to shoulder, occasionally back to back, in the van of Task Force Megadeth's increasingly ragged formation. It was like watching them fight the network incursion, using the intimate familiarity with each other's capabilities their long and intense rivalry had given them to read two steps ahead and adjust their maneuvers accordingly, turning knowledge honed for the development of countermeasures to the improvisation of cooperative tactics instead. The thought, even in the middle of this mad scramble to save and survive, made Sylvie smile as she forced her full attention into her own sphere of battle. Unarmored and wielding an unfamiliar weapon, she was perhaps at the greatest disadvantage of any of them. But she was Megazone's daughter, Yuri Daniels' daughter, a 3WA Trocon, and a member of the Across Getter team. Sylvie Anne Daniels was nobody's deadweight. That wasn't the whimpering statement of insecurity and bravado some people took it for. She didn't feel any burning need to prove it. She just lived it, every moment of her life, the way other people breathed. She gunned down one of the wall-crawling Geth. Based on their tendency to leap from place to place, she'd mentally dubbed them Hoppers, since they didn't appear in her database by any name at all, and looked past the spire it had been preparing to spring from. "Scrap!" she yelled over the din of combat. "Another dropship lifting off. Damn it, we've got to get some kind of a handle on the airspace in this district, or we're going to lose everybody." Altahex. Two Autobots pulled to a halt a block short of the little Iacon wall, having taken the long way around to avoid the half-crashed speedway network. They sprang up into robot mode, then immediately took cover behind the road median, peering over it at their target a half-mile distant. "Looks like the reports were right," the larger of the two, a slab-sided, heavily armored figure in medium blue and red, murmured. Red Alert nodded, deploying a magnifying visor over his optics and zooming in on the base of the little Iacon anti-aircraft command tower. "Geth combat forms. According to the rough database Blaster relayed to me from Sylvie's records, the two red ones are called Juggernauts." "Apt," his companion observed. "And the quadrupedal one is an armature." Red Alert retracted his mag visor and sighed. "At least it isn't a Colossus." "Small favors," the other remarked. "Okay, here's how I think we should play this. You're faster than I am, and my armor's tougher than yours. I'll keep these clowns busy. You get into the tower and do what you do." Red Alert chuckled. "Not our subtlest plan, but then we're pressed for time." He nodded. "Good luck, Nightstick." "Luck is for amateurs," Nightstick replied, grinning. Then he transformed back to his armored car vehicle mode, rounded the corner, and made for the tower at full speed, opening fire with his roof-mounted twin blaster cannon. Red Alert waited until the Geth guarding the base of the tower were fully engaged, then transformed and beat it for the tower entrance with all the speed he could muster. The Juggernauts noticed him, would have been hard not to, what with his bright red and white armor, and moved to intercept. Nightstick rammed the armature, knocking it off its feet, and used it as a kind of ramp to spring into the air, transforming as he did so. He came down almost on top of the nearer Juggernaut to Red Alert's path, burying his sonic gladius in the mechanoid's shoulder, and sprayed the other one with missiles from one of his shoulder compartments. Red Alert threaded his way through the mayhem at full speed, transformed just short of the tower entrance, and crashed through shoulder first, rolling and coming up on one knee with his particle beam rifle at the ready. The tower lobby contained a half-dozen Geth soldier forms, slightly smaller than the ones outside. Destroyers, according to his database. He gunned down the nearest one, then sprang over its fallen shell, tagging one of the ones across the room with a shoulder-fired missile as he went, and into cover behind a bank of secondary consoles. All the systems down here, Red Alert well knew, were just status displays and secondaries. The controls that would enable him to reactivate the AA grid for the little Iacon sector were in the master control room at the top of the tower, and there were sure to be a lot more Geth between him and them. That was all right, though. It had been a very stressful last few days, and if there was one thing Red Alert had learned about himself since he'd taken the job as chief of public safety for all of Cybertron, it was that stress relief was very important. He broke cover and started cleaning house. Autobot Air Defense Zone 17, Uriah. Altitude, 25,000 feet. Eagle One to Stardeck, said Terror into her comm.
Go ahead, Eagle One.
The voice of the air station Cybertron controller on duty, not a transformer, just a call sign, replied. I have a visual on Little Iacon, Terror reported. Hostile aerospace activity is confirmed. Looks like Red Alert was right. It's some kind of transports. I've got two inbound and one heading out. Hard to tell from this far up, but it looks like a hell of a firefight's going on in Central Square. Request priority tasking.
Roger, Eagle One. Wait one. Eagle One, be advised. Outbound transports are believed to be carrying Minicon abductees. Do not engage except with ion pulse weapons.
Well, that simplifies things. I haven't got any, Terror said. Shit! If I had my Valk, I could try to force them down in Batroid mode.
Can't be helped, Eagle One. Recommend you concentrate on the inbound vessels. Good news is, you just crossed the Little Iacon sector perimeter. You are clear to engage. I repeat, weapons free.
Roger, Stardeck. Vectoring to intercept. Terror winged over, dumping altitude, as she switched on her weapons and locked her targeting system on the nearer of the two inbound ships to the plaza. As she did, her proximity sensor peeped, and a moment later another aircraft streaked past, supersonic, so close it rocked her Cosmo Eagle with its shockwave. What the... Stardeck, I've got...
Oh, no need to involve them,
said a cheerful, rasping tenor voice, and the battered face of a Decepticon Sky Soldier appeared on her center VDU.
Don't mind me. I'm just going to have a crack at bringing down that outbound transport. After all,
he added with a faint smirk out of the side of his face that could smirk,
I have got a Batroid mode, as it were.
Terra considered that, decided there wasn't much she could do to stop him anyway, and shrugged. Couldn't hurt. And you are?
Just a patriot defending his homeworld,
the stranger replied, winking one of his red optics.
See you around, General. And may I say, before we both get to work, that is a fine-looking aircraft you're flying there.
Thanks. Eagle One out. He disappeared. A moment later, the voice of Stardeck asked,
General, say again? Your last transmission was 1x5.
Disregard, Stardeck. Then she thumbed in her afterburners and dove on the first transport, opening fire with the Cosmo Eagle's twin Gatling blasters, too busy to explain further. Little Iacon Central Square. Sylvie saw the explosions bloom from the forward segment of the closer insectoid dropship, and watched it fall into the deserted streets to the east of the square. Then her nano-enhanced vision caught the glint of starlight from the silver hull of Terror's SF-15D, and she whooped with joy, punching a fist in the air.
"Yeah! Get 'em, Terror!" she cried.
The Geth noticed, too. They could hardly fail to. And it seemed to make them double their efforts. It was as though they realized that their escape route was being cut off, and became all the more determined to force another way out. For all their fury and firepower, Task Force Megadeth hadn't made much progress in the... Good God, it had only been 5 minutes? Since they burst out into the square. The Geth seemed to have inexhaustible numbers. They kept pouring into the square from side streets in answer to calls for reinforcements, having, as Soundwave predicted, figured out a way around the Transformers' signal jamming. Slowly but surely, the task force was being squeezed toward the center of the square, which was bad in two ways. One, it meant they weren't getting closer to their objective, and two, they were starting to edge toward a serious danger of being bottled up and then overrun. As it was, they were already being forced onto the defensive, taking cover behind rubble and damaged features of the square, tightening up their arcs of fire. Their air units still ranged freely, but Buzzsaw and Laserbeak could only do so much. Above, Sylvie heard the sound of something powering up, motors engaging, thinking it might be Geth trying to get the drop on them from the air defense tower in the corner of the square. She turned, looked up, and saw the twin-barreled turret above the tower swivel, then opened fire, wiping a second incoming dropship out of the sky.
"All right, Red!"
Blaster yelled, blasting a juggernaut before it could lob a rocket at Stinger. His weapons seemed to have little effect on the bigger Geth platforms, leaving him at something of a disadvantage as the smaller ones became few in number. "Stinger, what's your status?" Sylvie asked, ducking into cover alongside him. "Low weapon charge?" "They're limited," Stinger replied, blasting away at a destroyer to no visible avail. He hunkered down as a rocket exploded against the wall behind him and explained, "I'm not authorized for full-power weapons. I've got a software block in my status computer that limits my Stingers to 30% power. It won't come off till I clock 568 total elapsed petacycles. About 6 more months." Sylvie flinched as a spray of plasma fire spalled the top of the barricade she was crouched behind.
"Fuck! Are you kidding me?"
"Wish I was," Stinger said, laying down a bit more ineffective fire.
"I told you I could fix that for you,"
Sari called across the narrow walkway separating her corner of the sunken corner plaza from theirs.
"Not really the time, Sari,"
Stinger replied, and then,
"Ah!"
as a heavy bolt from an armature tagged his shoulder and sent him sprawling to the ground.
"Stinger!"
Sari cried.
"I'm okay,"
he called back, though his shoulder was a smoking wreck and he was struggling to rise.
"Hold your position!"
Sylvie peeked above the barricade and saw the heaviest Geth force yet closing in on them. They'd wiped out almost all the trooper-scale units now, so the force moving toward them was smaller in sheer numbers than the one they'd started with, but it was almost entirely juggernauts and up in size and power, and far in the back, beyond the small knot of armatures and destroyers still hemming in the remaining Minicon prisoners, she saw what looked like another regiment of Geth pour into the middle of the square from the main boulevards, with a pair of colossi backing them up.
"This is about 20 seconds from being a last stand," Bulkhead called, crushing an armature with an overhand swing of his wrecking ball. "Anybody got any more bright ideas? Now's the time."
Rumble smashed his fists together, still incandescent with the fury that had carried him and his brother halfway to the Minicon holding area before the tide of Geth had forced them back. They were Decepticons, yes, but they were also Minicons. The one was a tie of allegiance, the other ran much deeper. Neither was willing to let so many of their fellows be taken by these alien things without giving it every last bit of fight that was in them. And as anyone who had ever faced them in battle knew, that was a hell of a lot more fight than their miniature shells looked like they could contain.
"Come on, bro,"
he snarled, clapping Frenzy on the shoulder. "If these fucking flashlight heads are gonna kill us, let's go show 'em how a bot from the Sonic Canyons dies." And suddenly, with a mental flash like the detonation of a stun grenade, Sylvie knew what she had to do. Crouching fully behind her cover, she powered up her Cortana, loaded an Infosphere probe utility, and saw what she expected to see in the holographic display field. These Geth were cybernetic dual life forms. For every synth muscle and metal shell marching toward them across the square, there was a swarm of those insect-like runtime avatars in its cyberspace equivalent. Without worrying about her slagged barrier collar, Sylvie cabled straight to the Cortana, her fingers flying over its holographic keyboard as she ran a lightning-quick simulation to see if her idea had any hope of working, and saw that it did. As fast as she could, she bundled it into an encrypted flashgram and fired it to Soundwave and Blaster. Soundwave finished interpreting it first. Almost instantly, he turned to her and nodded.
"Affirmative."
Blaster was right behind him, with a slightly more equivocal, but no less willing, "That just might work, and it ain't like we got a lot to lose at this point." He and Soundwave looked at each other, made an instant's optic contact, and nodded. They both turned, sprang toward Sylvie, and transformed. She was already running, catching one in each hand. "Covering fire!" she bellowed in her best battlefield command voice, which was copied almost tone for tone from her mother's. Then she raised Blaster in one hand and Soundwave in the other, aiming their speakers toward the oncoming Geth army, and stepped out from behind the last of the cover, squarely into the middle of the steel-bricked walkway, leading out of their corner and into the main square. Fire from Bulkhead's massive blasters, Stinger's much smaller ones, Sari's repulsors, Rumble and Frenzy's thruster guns, even Miko's pistol, with which, Sylvie noticed again, she was an excellent shot, ripped through the air around her, making the Geth check their advance for an instant. It was all the time Sylvie needed. "Block your receptors!" she roared, and with that, she sent a single cybernetic command to her Cortana, cueing Soundwave and Blaster to load the same program and run the same audio track simultaneously. In the real world, and on the other side of the wire, both comm officers' outputs cranked straight up to 11. On the one side, music, and on the other side, tailored cyber noise, poured forth at literally staggering volume. Sylvie was driven back by the sheer wall of sound suddenly produced by the two transformers. She grimaced and dug in her heels, her arms stretched straight out, each hand holding on to the two robots' equipment modes. Her grip was so tight that she feared she might break some of her finger bones, if the heavy vibrations from the two didn't do in her hands first. But that was nothing compared to the sonic, seismic, and subspace distortions now ripping across the open area, slamming straight into the massed bipedal and quadruped Geth. They staggered and shook as they tried to regroup, falling back on default subroutines as their communications network was ripped to shreds by the ether wave onslaught. But it was to no avail, and as their gyro-stabilizers began to give out from the seismic vibrations blanketing the terrain, the sonic disruptions added their own counterpoints, shattering critical circuits, vulnerable components, and weapon collimators with dispatch. Sylvie thought she could almost see the disturbances crisscrossing the area. The sound and fury produced by Blaster and Soundwave's harmonic output was that intense. Privately, she was glad she had the 3WA's standard tactical cochlear implants. Not only did they allow her to damp the noise to the point where it wouldn't fry her own brain, she wouldn't be walking around deaf until her ears could regenerate afterward. And even so, and even though she was behind the direct blast itself, she was nearly knocked out. The cassette crew wasn't doing much better, taking cover where they could. Rewind and Buzzsaw had retreated, choosing a niche in a nearby alley that didn't look like it would spontaneously collapse. Laserbeak, Steeljaw, and Ravage took shelter behind and beneath an overturned trash container. Even Frenzy and Rumble, easily the two noisiest and most anarchic of the Decepticons, lovers of thrash rock music so hard and grating that it could shatter dilithium, were standing stock still at the sight and sound of the chaos around them. But not for the same reason as the rest of their brethren. As lovers of hardcore rock and appreciators of the classics, Rumble and Frenzy had become immobile with shock, paralyzed by a sort of religious ecstasy at hearing the Stooges played at genuinely reality-warping volume. Never in their wildest dreams did they ever think anyone would get their boss and Blaster to play any track together, much less one that ruled as hard as Search and Destroy. They were so engrossed in the music that they didn't notice the fact that Bulkhead, Stinger, and Sari were now taking advantage of the Geth's paralysis, waiting out, even with Stinger's bad arm and ineffective weapons, to lay down some serious scrapping on their paralyzed foes. They also didn't notice Miko in the back, headbanging and throwing the horns as the faceplate of her CVR helmet cracked right across. Only Ramhorn remained on the immediate field of battle, his legs foursquare and locked in position beside Sylvie Daniels, his horn lowered and optics flaring,
serving as the last line of defense in case any of the enemy's synthetics managed to survive the acoustic or physical carnage.